We're recapping the Republican National Convention and gathering your thoughts here on The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer-Kent. Last night, the fourth and last day, brought us another appearance from President Donald Trump to accept the nomination from a place where past nominees have tried to keep overt politics at bay, the White House.
The Republican Party, the party of Abraham Lincoln, goes forward united, determined, and ready to welcome millions of Democrats, independents, and anyone who believes in the greatness of America and the righteous heart of the American people.
Did you watch the RNC? What are your reflections? What speakers, videos, or moments stood out to you? Give us a call at 800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. J.R. Ross is the editor of WisPolitics. He covers Wisconsin government and politics. This week, he's been following the Republican National Convention. J.R., thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network.
Anytime. How are you doing this morning?
Good, thanks. We've also got Bill Glauber along for the ride. He's covered politics for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel since 2006. He traveled to cover the wars in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Kosovo. And this week, he's been following the RNC. Bill, thanks for being here.
We survived it. 18 hours of politics over the last 2 weeks, both JR and I.
Let's just have a moment to soak that in. Let's go ahead and get started. JR, can you tell us a little bit about the format of this event? How did the coronavirus pandemic affect how Republican delegates met this week?
Well, look, these conventions are really all about putting forth a finely crafted message that's honed around what the nominee wants to put forward. That didn't change. It just went from being an in-person thing with delegates cheering every speech to being more of an infomercial. The Republicans tried harder to have more of that convention feel with the president's speech last night, the vice president's speech on Wednesday, having people there. They weren't all delegates. Also, people noticed there weren't a lot of social distancing or masks going on in the crowds with that. But it was just a different feel. And you went from having recorded messages to having some live. It's unique. But in the end, it's all about the message. And I think that all the Republicans really cared about was how the message came off. And if they felt like Donald Trump got the message he wanted out to people, which is he's a law and order guy. And if you go with Joe Biden, the country's going to be in flames.
Yeah, we'll definitely dig into that. Bill, though, traditionally, when the conventions took place in big arenas, a candidate would accept the nomination, give a big speech on that last night. That's not quite how President Trump was involved in this RNC.
No, he was there for four nights. He made appearances four nights, ending up with last night's 70-minute speech. First time ever that a convention has been brought to the grounds of the White House. Obviously, a lot of controversy with that. The U.S. Senator Amy Klobuchar, who has a wicked wit sometimes, tweeted, "Get off our lawn." So it was quite an evening, quite a spectacle, whether you agree or disagree with it. And I felt with the speech last night, there was a 30-minute speech dying to get out of a 70-minute speech. But, you know, Trump hit the notes that he wanted to hit, and we'll see how the polling goes, and the race is on.
Last night's speech, although prominently featuring the White House, not the only way that was involved in the convention's events. JR, what else was notable when it came to a naturalization ceremony?
Well, there were five people who were naturalized. I think that was Tuesday night. They all kind of run together, to be honest with you, after eight nights of covering conventions. But I think it was Tuesday night. There are a couple of people who said they weren't aware that they were going to be involved in a public ceremony like that. It also happened at the White House. And look, we've been through, let's say, a norm-busting period the last 3.5 years. This may have been one of the ultimate norm-busters to have the White House use as a backdrop. But in some ways, you know, it's also politically smart. I mean, the president's using the power of incumbency, the magistery of the White House to say, look, as he said last night, I'm here and they're not. He used it to try and drive a message of being in charge. And that, you know, he's the incumbent. And people are going to be unhappy about it because it's, in some people's mind, a violation of the Hatch Act, which prevents federal employees from being involved in campaigns. But I get the impression that Republicans and the president only really care about the images and the message. And if those two things resonate with especially the suburban voters who are maybe waffling on the Republican Party and Donald Trump, they don't care about the Hatch Act.
J.R. Ross has been doing this for 20 years. He's the editor of WisPolitics. Also here with Bill Glauber, who's a reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And we're making our way through the speeches, the themes, and the politics of this week's Republican National Convention. You can weigh in at 800-642-1234. Maybe you watched the RNC. What are your reflections? Did the convention motivate you one way or another? 800-642-1234. First Lady Melania Trump spoke from the White House Rose Garden. Here she is addressing the pandemic.
The invisible enemy, COVID-19, swept across our beautiful country and impacted all of us. My deepest sympathy goes out to everyone who has lost a loved one, and my prayers are with those who are ill or suffering. I know many people are anxious and some feel helpless. I want you to know you're not alone.
First ladies, they're not the candidate, and yet they're part of this package we elect when we put a president in office. Bill, what stood out to you from the first lady's speech?
Well, that section right there was something that we haven't necessarily heard from the White House through all these months of the pandemic. And, you know, it's expressing sympathy and discussing the pandemic in real terms is something that has bedeviled the White House, which has been trying to say, you know, things are fine. And the convention, you know, set an alternate reality of sorts with no social distancing last night. I thought that the First Lady's speech was quite effective. But again, it was something that, you know, maybe should have been said several months ago. But, you know, it was an appropriate theme for her speech. And, you know, I think that, that people who watched the speech were probably very affected by it.
On that note, though, JR, did that seem to fit in with the rest of the messages then? Or is it in conflict with the rest of the things people have been saying at the RNC?
Well, one of the takeaways from this convention is, and the national coverage has been noting the kind of different messages you're seeing. On one hand, a law and order president. On another, somebody who is involved in criminal justice reform. But what might be the thing that ties it all together is trying to humanize a president in some way. That's one thing that the First Lady tried to do, to try to address the tweeting without like really addressing the tweeting, saying things like, yeah, you always know what's on his mind, and he's not politically correct, but he always cares about America when he's doing these things. So it's just, I got the impression from people and I talked to and just the coverage of it, that there was a conscious effort to take the rough edges off the president as much as they can and try to put a positive spin on not just who he is, but what he's done. I mean, think about the way it talked about COVID-19, all these issues. They try to make it, you know, this guy seem not this person you see on Twitter, but this person that they know, in their words, and how he cares about America.
We're talking with J.R. Ross and also Bill Glauber, who stay with us as we take stock of the RNC. Vice President Mike Pence spoke of the administration's economic accomplishments on Wednesday night.
In our first 3 years, we built the greatest economy in the world. We made America great again. And then the coronavirus struck from China.
What did you hear in the messaging of the RNC? What are your takeaways from watching the convention? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. I'm Keeley Boltina. Our conversation continues here on The Morning Show. This is the Ideas Network. We're spending the hour recapping the Republican National Convention and gathering your thoughts on the 4-day affair that looked a little different in this pandemic. It's The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina, and we're bringing you voices from this week. Also, looking for you to weigh in. Did you catch the Republican National Convention? What messages did you think came through? 800-642-1234. We've got J.R. Ross, who's the editor of WisPolitics. Bill Glauber is a reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And we've got Linda from Monroe, who wants to join the conversation. Good morning, Linda.
Good morning. Now, I do believe that Republican President Trump did everything to really make Joe Biden look bad by lying to do so, starting with the health care and concerning COVID-19, as well as the economy, which has only recovered half of what President Trump said it has, and then the worst fact of just how bad a racist President Trump is by not even mentioning the shooting of Jacob Blake, which was demonstrated by all the athletes that didn't play and in support of the wrongful shooting of Jacob Blake.
Yeah, Linda, thanks for pointing that out and bringing up your takes from the RNC. Bill, protests against police violence have been ongoing since the spring. We're seeing the situation in Kenosha. And yet Linda's saying, why didn't we hear the president address these racial tensions in America when it's happening in Wisconsin right now?
They've chosen not to. You know, he's presenting a law and order message. Jacob Blake's name was mentioned once last night by Ben Carson. It's an unusual state of affairs in the country. It's two views, two different takes on the situation. And, you know, at the Democratic convention, you heard a plea of such for Black Lives Matter. At this convention, that it was a different message. And it's just, you know, sort of like what is on the ballot this fall, how you view things. So it didn't surprise me what they were trying to do. And also, of course, trying to present Joe Biden as a Trojan horse, an empty vessel who will be filled with socialist ideas from others. So that's what conventions are about. And people can assess them how they want. The caller assessed it one way. I'm sure we'll get another caller assessing it another way.
Yeah. I mean, back in 2016, Trump ran on law and order. That message echoed throughout the week. Here's Michael McHale, who's president of the National Police Union, addressing the convention.
Chaos results when failed officials in cities like Portland, Minneapolis, Chicago, and New York make the conscious decision not to support law enforcement. Shootings, murders, looting, and rioting occur unabated.
JR, how do we put that into context with the current events and what we're seeing here at home?
Well, a couple of things. I mean, Kenosha brings all of these issues right into our backyard. I mean, obviously, what happened in Minneapolis with George Floyd was kind of next door, but this is right here in Wisconsin. You have the confluence of, you know, the protests over police treatment of Black men, usually. You have the people are uneasy about the protests and that ensues, especially when it turns violent. So how is that going to play on things? What I'm watching is, if you look at the Marquette University Law School poll, and what looked asked about Black Lives Matter and the protests, immediately after the George Floyd stuff happened in June, the numbers are pretty good. There's a net positive view of Black Lives Matter, a net positive view of the protests. In August, those numbers dropped. Now, still a net positive view of Black Lives Matter, but it dropped, I think, by like 10 or 12 points. Well, in between those two polls, you had what happened in Madison, right? Protests on State Street, two statues torn down on the Capitol Square. There are protests in Portland, Chicago, other places. So did that drive that drop? Second thing is, even though those numbers dropped for Black Lives Matter and the protests, they didn't change in the presidential race. I mean, it almost was unchanged. It went from Biden plus six to Biden plus five, which in a poll is basically almost nothing. It's a rounding error. So I'm watching, does Kenosha change that? Is there some dynamic about what happened here that impacts the presidential race? Now, Republicans feel like seeing these things in Kenosha is going to drive people away from Biden, especially suburbanites that we're going to talk about ad nauseum from now until November, that they'll come back in the fold because they want law and order. They want safety. But it's not clear what we've seen so far that those folks are really moved by what they're seeing. So might Kenosha change things? You know, maybe. It's going to take some time to figure that out.
J.R. Ross and Bill Glauber cover politics, and this week they've been reporting on the Republican National Convention. We're recapping the messages and the speeches, also taking your calls, your observations at 800-642-1234. What resonated with you with the RNC? Did the convention motivate you? Maybe you participated somehow. Let's talk about it at 800-642-1234. We've got James in the town of Eagle ready to join the conversation. Hi, James.
Hi, good morning. My question is, the White House is the people's house and not the Republican house. So did we charge them, the people, did we charge the Republicans for using the White House as their convention facility? And if we did charge them, how much do we charge?
And James, thanks for that question. And really, we're also looking at the fact that, you know, Democrats paid to rent facilities in Milwaukee. Republicans had facilities in Charlotte, North Carolina. Bill, help us respond to James when it comes to the White House and it being a government place where you're not really supposed to do political activities.
Well, first of all, James, that's a great question. You should be an editor. It's one I never thought of. I don't know the answer. But it is a great question because it's never happened before like this. I know that they had to pay for the fireworks at the Washington Monument last night and for the use of that ground. I do know that. But that's an excellent question. To the broader question, the use of the White House. I think the phrase we use is norm busting. It just never has happened before. There have been White House strategies where you do campaigning from the White House by going about your own business, but we've never seen it taken to this extent to turn the White House into a backdrop, to use it, to use the pageantry and the majesty of the presidency in a way like this. So I don't think it's going to, I don't think going forward, things will ever be the same again. I think the whole convention experience, both on the Democratic side and the Republican side, is going to change. I'm not so sure that we're going back to fully live conventions anymore. Think about it. They can control the message right down to the minute. Think about it. There are no more floor fights. There are no more battles. How can you have a floor fight in a virtual world? So I think some of the things that we've seen from this unprecedented year of the pandemic, conventions will be carried on going forward.
Martha in Rhinelander has given us a call at 800-642-1234. Martha, what's on your mind?
Well, I watched both conventions, which I have since I was a child. I just got the impression that Biden told me what he was going to do. Trump spoke supposedly 70 minutes and mentioned Biden's name 42 times, which is every other minute. Trump told me what the Democrats wouldn't do and didn't tell me what he did, but he told me what he thought he did the last 3.5 years. I didn't get any plans from him for the future.
Martha, thank you for sharing what you heard in the convention. And JR, this is back to your point about messaging.
Yeah, I mean, the Trump campaign has struggled somewhat, mostly due to the candidate, to define what a second term would look like and what these goals would be. Now we started to see some things like a promise of creating 10 million jobs in 10 months. Don't forget, I think we've brought back 9 million jobs after losing 22 million. So just getting back to where we were before the pandemic would create that 10 million jobs. He's talked about bringing down prescription drug prices. Otherwise, it's largely been continuing the policies we've seen for the last 3.5 years. And that's something we kind of watched out of this White House is, how are they making the argument of what Trump would do or why, what giving a second term would do? What would be different? I don't know the answer is that much would be different. It looks so far like it'd be a continuation of what he's done so far. And so going back to these questions about, big questions about November, it's like I get the impression that if the Republicans feel like if this election is a referendum on Donald Trump, they're in trouble. But if they can make it a binary choice between Trump and Biden, and make Biden an unappealing option, then that's better for him. And so you're going to, that's part of why you hear him talking more about Biden than you do about himself, because they're trying to disqualify Biden as a viable alternative to the president.
J.R. Ross has been doing this work for 20 years. We've got Bill Glauber also, who's covered politics for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel since 2006. J.R. Ross with WISP Politics. And we're going through the RNC. We're getting a recap, listening to some clips from some of the speeches, better understanding what messages came across. Chris Peterson, a dairy farmer from Wisconsin, spoke at this week's Republican convention.
As a businessman, President Trump understands that farming is a complicated, capital-intensive, and risky business. More than any president in my lifetime, he has acknowledged the importance of farmers and agriculture.
What did you hear when paying attention to the Republican National Convention? Did you participate in it? Did it compare to years past? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. Send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Our conversation continues about speakers and notable moments from the RNC. Up next is news. I'm Keeley Boltina. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Next week after the morning show, you'll get to hear 1A live. Starting Monday, Jen White and the 1A team will be on your radio starting at 9 o'clock in the morning. On Point is moving to 1 in the afternoon. And we're also welcoming a new show to the schedule. It's called The Takeaway, and it airs at 2. Take a listen. Join in the national conversation. Let us know what you think. You can see complete details on our website. Just visit WPR.org/fall2020. You're with us here on The Morning Show. I'm Keeley Boltina in for Kate Archer Kent. We're recapping the Republican National Convention this hour, and we're gathering your takeaways on the 4 nights of speeches. What are your reflections about the RNC? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. We've got J.R. Ross here on the Ideas Network. He's the editor of WISP Politics. Bill Glauber, also here, reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And Jack from Caledonia is on the line. Good morning, Jack.
Good morning. Yeah, I watched both conventions. And from my take from the DNC, they were just touting, Joe and Kamala are nice people. They talked a little bit about what a Biden presidency would look like. As far as the Trump, President Trump's the DNC convention, he talked about the economy. He talked about jobs. They mentioned energy. They talked about the military, talked about reducing our, the wars that we're involved in, talked about the diplomacy, moving the embassy to Jerusalem, talked about the unemployment rates, pre-pandemic, where the employment rate was for, the different minority groups. He talked about immigration. They covered a lot of things, what they did and what they plan to do.
Thanks for bringing that up, because I want to give Bill a chance, because Jack's saying, I heard the message loud and clear.
Jack did hear the message loud and clear. He ticked off the points that the Republicans were making last night. Their critique of the Democratic convention is that you did not hear policies. You heard more talk about the personalities and the empathy. And so the message got through to Jack loud and clear.
And did we get more policy then out of the Republican National Convention?
No, because we didn't get because they don't have a we got speeches, but there's no party platform. They chose not to write a party platform this year, even though people don't read those things. That's really where the policy is. And the Democrats do have a party platform. I say that, no, I'm sort of joking about it, but that is the reality, that they're, one side took the time to issue what it was going to do. The other side did it in speeches and did it very effectively. And there we are, politics in 2020.
Yeah. JR, what about that lack of a party platform? Does that really affect anything?
No, the party is Donald Trump. I mean, let's be honest. Donald Trump was shunned by a lot of Republicans 4 years ago, 5 years ago when he first started to run. But as that campaign progressed, he molded the Republican Party to him through sheer will. And it's interesting, a lot of Republicans that I know who thought the base was with them on things like free trade or taxes realized that they were off, that the base was more populist than they realized. And Donald Trump captured that. Mm-hmm. So in some ways, yeah, they don't have a platform, but the platform has been Donald Trump and has been for a while. So it's all about him. And this gets to parties sometimes become more about personality than principle. And Donald Trump is driving that train. So I'm not surprised. I mean, on the one hand, it's an easy target to knock Republicans for it. But on the other, you know, what is the Republican Party about these days? Well, it's Donald Trump is the defining factor in how the party sees things.
We've got Rich from Rhinelander ready to join the conversation. Hi, Rich.
Hi. Thanks. We watched all 8 days of both conventions and the president's speech last night. Acceptance speech, two things struck me. One was for a guy who refers to his opponent as Sleepy Joe. To me, at least, he did not come across as particularly energetic in his style of delivery. The other thing was, as I listened to the very lengthy speech, more than two times longer than Joe Biden's acceptance speech, I thought if the Democrats latch on to Reagan's question, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago, all of this is going to be meaningless because, I mean, the president's speech struck me as a fairly meaningless exercise in avoiding some of the crucial things that are going on in Kenosha and in our culture generally today, rent evictions and stuff like that. So,
yeah, Rich, appreciate the call. Bill, this is another caller who is mentioning the fact that when Trump spoke, he mentioned Joe Biden a lot. And when Biden spoke, he didn't really mention Trump.
Zero times he mentioned Donald Trump's name. Well, one person is behind in the polls. That would be the president. The other person was ahead in the polls at the time. We'll see how that drags out. I think that, you know, for all the fire and fury and passion of these conventions, you know, there's a long way to go yet. We have the debates. We have what the campaign is going to look like. So, you know, so things will change. I will go back to that speech. As I said at the top, a 30-minute speech was crying to get out. It sounded more like an overstuffed State of the Union speech. There were plenty of attack lines. It probably would have been better, a better speech had it been tightened and more focused. I think it would have been more memorable. As for the sing-song quality, or as the caller said, sleepy deliverance, delivery by President Trump, you know, often that's how he is when he reads off a teleprompter. But when you see his shtick that he does during his appearances in a campaign, he goes from teleprompter to the shtick back to the teleprompter. And that's when he's really at his best, is when he's riffing. That's when he fires up the crowd. But there was no riffing in this speech, or very little last night.
We're hearing from Bill Glauber, who's a reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, talking with J.R. Ross here also, who's the editor of Wisp Politics. And we're talking about recapping the Republican National Convention. What we heard, what you heard, you can call in at 800-642-1234 as we talk about the RNC this week. We've compiled some moments from speeches. Here's Donald Trump Jr. on the president's pandemic response.
Fortunately, as the virus began to spread, the president acted quickly and ensured ventilators got to hospitals that needed them most. He delivered PPE to our brave frontline workers, and he rallied the mighty American private sector to tackle this new challenge.
Bill, the coronavirus pandemic is affecting all of us. And when we hear Donald Trump Jr. say that, it seems really inspirational. Is that a fair assessment of what's happening with the president's leadership on COVID-19?
Probably not. There are, I believe, nearly 180,000 dead, 6 million cases. It's a source of debate in terms of the White House, the administration's response to the pandemic. This is going to be with us for a while, obviously. So, you know, depending how you view the parties, maybe depending how you view the response to the pandemic, but, you know, it's obviously not as rosy a picture or as an effective a picture as Donald Trump Jr. described it.
JR, we heard speakers praise the Trump administration's response in the pandemic. We also heard them praise the economic recovery.
Yeah, well, they're trying to change the narrative about COVID-19. Look, it's no coincidence. It's no coincidence that Donald Trump's numbers started to drop significantly with his response to COVID-19. People are unhappy with how he responded. They don't feel safe, and that's caused him a problem. And so in talking to people about what they're trying to do with this messaging, one of the responses I got, and tying this back into what happened with Kenosha, is that, you know, if November 1st rolls around and we're talking about COVID-19 still as a major topic, a driving issue in the race, that has advantaged Joe Biden. If it's November 1st and we're talking about safety in the streets and the economy, that's advantaged Donald Trump. And the Trump campaign knows this. They know that they have a weak spot with COVID-19, and they're trying to rewrite history to make it seem like he was decisive and that he did everything right when people don't really necessarily feel that way.
Is that adjustment of the narrative typical, JR, for national conventions for either party?
Well, I don't know if you use the word typical Donald Trump in any way, shape, or form. He's been a unique figure in the time that I've been covering politics. They've been unique in the way they've tried to frame things, because look, the guy gets fact checked constantly, and the things that he says, according to fact checkers, aren't true. And he's unperturbed. And the people who follow Donald Trump, they love Donald Trump. His challenge, though, is those people who aren't real happy with him. Can he ease their concerns and make them feel more comfortable, because they then feel it, because he can make Joe Biden seem like a bad guy? That's what they're trying to do. They're trying to, again, smooth off the rough edges of Donald Trump, make him seem more palatable to people, and then disqualify Joe Biden.
We're here talking about the RNC with J.R. Ross, also Bill Glauber. And Wisconsin businessman John Peterson gave the national audience this comparison on Tuesday.
As a lifelong resident of Wisconsin, I'm a fan of the Badger football team. Many may not realize that the Wisconsin Badgers and the president share three common qualities. They are smart, they're tough, and they're dependable.
Did you hear that speech or any of the others with the Republican National Convention? Did you watch the RNC every night? What are your reflections? What did the convention motivate you to do? You can give us a call at 800-642-1234 or use the email address. It's ideas@WPR.org. Bill Glauber and J.R. Ross stay with us through the hour to talk about what they heard, what we should think about, and how the campaign is shaping up after the national conventions. I'm Keeley Boltina. It's The Morning Show, and this is the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show. I'm Keeley Boltina, and we're catching up on these last 4 days of the Republican National Convention. We have J.R. Ross here, who's the editor of WisPolitics, also Bill Glauber, who's a reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and we're taking your questions, your calls, your responses to the convention. We've got Mike from Wakanda, Illinois, on the line. Hey, Mike.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning. What was on your mind as you are thinking about the Republican National Convention? Oh, it sounds like we've lost Mike. I will say what Mike told us was that Mike's a Republican, but wants a president we can look up to, and says he doesn't relate to Democrats either. And Mike is certainly not alone in feeling like neither one of these parties is really representing him right now. Bill, what are you hearing from people?
Yeah, you have that in every election where there are people on the fence and, you know, turned off by both parties. And that happens every election. Democrats are trying to make the case that Donald Trump is an existential threat to democracy. Republicans are trying to make the case that Joe Biden is an existential threat to American capitalism. So when you have these dire points of view of the other side, it's not unusual that people are left saying, well, I don't want either of them, and I'm lost here. So you will have a percentage of that. I mean, I think JR probably knows this better than I do. In a state like Wisconsin, what are we talking about, the electorate that's up for grabs? Is it 8%, 13%? I mean, it's such a narrow slice. Most everybody else is in their corner.
Yeah, JR, what about that issue of people feeling like, well, you know, maybe I've always been a Democrat, but I like the things that Trump's saying, or maybe I've always been a Republican, but that doesn't quite fit in either way right now.
No, it's actually why the Election Commission action last week on Kanye West and the Green Party tickets, good news for Biden. Now, we are a week out from that decision. I haven't seen a lawsuit yet, but one could still be filed. But without having a Green Party candidate or Kanye West on the ballot, if you are somebody who isn't happy with either person, you have fewer choices. You can still write somebody in. But looking back in 2016, the Libertarian candidate, Gary Johnson, got more than 100,000 votes. Usually Republicans who are unhappy with their nominee or join true libertarians in voting for that ticket. The Green Party candidate, got, I think, 20-some thousand votes, something like that. Right now, they don't have a candidate ballot, so there's fewer options if you're a liberal not happy with Biden. So that's something to keep in mind about this fall. Again, that lawsuit hasn't been filed yet. One could still be. But that's something to watch about how that plays out.
Jimmy from Valley Junction has given us a call at 800-642-1234. Hi, Jimmy.
Morning. Yeah, I voted Republican for president until the second George W. Bush administration because I had enough of the Iraq thing. But most of the time, I consider myself kind of an independent. So most of the time after the election, the administrations at least try to be even-handed, and even though they're left or right of center, they'll try to be the president or administration of all the people. But I've never got the feeling with the Republicans during this administration, it's the base. And of course, that the convention, that was the theme. Trump's speech was all about Democratic cities being overrun with vandalism and stuff. So I just know how you win when you don't reach out to the other side a little bit. And I'll take my comments off the air.
Jimmy, thanks for bringing up that point, because it relates to what we've just been talking about. And JR, does anybody need to go beyond the base at this point?
Well, it's interesting. Part of the Trump strategy is not to attract people beyond the base, but to turn out more people who fit his base. If you look at 2016, we actually dipped in turnout in Wisconsin compared to the past presidential election. We were below 3 million voters. I've seen various projections of how many people who fit the Trump base. And that Trump base is often described as white, blue collar, non-college educated voters. There are several hundred thousand of them out there. So if you're Trump, if you can get those folks to the polls, you can negate problems you have in the suburbs. You can negate a boosted turnout in Milwaukee County. You can negate other things that Dems are trying to do to try and come back from the very, 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 very poor performance Hillary Clinton had in rural areas in 2016. The question is, those folks didn't vote last time. Why would they vote this time? How do you get them out? For Democrats, it's, you know, a little bit different story. They feel like they can pick up votes in the suburban areas. They feel like they can pick up Republicans unhappy and tired of Trump. They also, though, have to address their own enthusiasm issues. Look, black turnout was not the same in 16 as it was in 12. There are a number of reasons for that. Can they recapture it? That's also why you see Donald Trump's campaign and his convention knocking Joe Biden for saying to a radio host, man, if you don't know if you're voting for me or Trump, you ain't black. That's why you see them playing up the 94 crime bill to try and tear down Biden's black support. And, you know, there are definitely some issues there for Biden to address and try to fix to earn the black vote this fall. You know, and Republicans are trying to make the argument that they're not just going to, that voting block is not just going to give Biden the vote. He's going to have to earn it.
We're talking with J.R. Ross, who's editor of WISP Politics, and Bill Glauber, who's a reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And this week, they've been covering the Republican National Convention. And all four of President Trump's adult children spoke this week. We also heard personal stories about President Trump. Here's Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany on Trump's family support after her mastectomy.
As I came out of anesthesia, one of the first calls I received was from Ivanka Trump. As I recovered, my phone rang again. It was President Trump calling to check on me. I was blown away. Here was the leader of the free world caring about my circumstance.
Bill, why do conventions include these personal tidbits? What effect do they have?
Well, they try to personalize the candidate, obviously, to make the candidate something more than just an image, but you know, blood, sweat, bones. I thought that last night the most effective speeches were from Alice Johnson, who was pardoned, I believe, by Trump. Also from Ann Dorn, whose husband was killed in unrest in St. Louis. The other thing about those, they also tell you what the campaign is also trying to do. There were, I believe, four people from Wisconsin who either spoke or were featured in this convention. And, you know, obviously, this race is coming down to Wisconsin. So, you know, get ready for that. The likelihood is that, that Biden is likely to win the popular vote nationally, but that it becomes an electoral college race, which it always is. And the state everybody is focusing on is Wisconsin. And in fact, Joe Biden said last night yesterday at a fundraiser that he was looking to go, you know, to have some campaign events after Labor Day. And one of the states he mentioned was Wisconsin.
It comes down to Wisconsin. JR, what do you want to say about that?
Well, that was the message we got from Nancy Pelosi last week to Democratic delegates, that it's all on your shoulders. That's entirely possible. One reason why Wisconsin is so important is it's symbolic, right? If you talk about the blue wall of Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, if we're a little lighter, a little more less urban than those other two states are, if you're Trump, if you're not winning Wisconsin, you're probably not winning Michigan or Pennsylvania. So he has to have Wisconsin in that regard. But we're also seeing other avenues. Arizona's opening up as more of a swing state. There is a way for Dems not to win Wisconsin, but win Michigan, Pennsylvania, and pick up Arizona. Florida is in play. Like, there are all kinds of paths for both of these guys. But that blue wall, that symbolic blue wall, we're kind of the linchpin there, again, because we are, of those blue wall states, the most gettable for Donald Trump.
I also really think that, you know, there's a Wisconsin-Minnesota thing going on with the Trump campaign. You know, if Pennsylvania and Michigan have fallen away or fall away, you know, they're putting all the chips here and maybe with a side bet on Minnesota. I mean, I realize that's horse racy kind of stuff, but, you know, this is the reality that's emerging. But there's still plenty of time to go. We have two septuagenarians running. We really have never been in a position or in a race like this before. So, you know, buckle up.
Buckle up. Bill Glauber is a reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. J.R. Ross is editor of WISP Politics. I'm Keeley Boltina. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.